Hey, this is Ryan.
And this is Steve, and you're listening to 60 Cycle Hum, the guitar buying, selling, trading, modding, fixing, playing, reviewing podcast.
Aw, yeah, we're back.
Yeah, boy.
Technically, Monday after NAMM. Oh, we're so tired. We're so wrecked from NAMM.
I am so wrecked.
Just kidding. We recorded this episode before NAMM, so.
Yeah.
We're just fine. We're still hanging out in the garage. What is this? The WTF? What is this? Mark Maron's show? Hanging out in the garage?
Dude, I wish we could get Mark Maron.
I have written his PR person. Hey, you know what we need to talk about?
What do we need to talk about?
This episode is brought to you by Fox Pedals. They want us to talk about the Wave, which is their super crazy delay reverb box.
Every time I look down at your pedal board, I'm like, Ryan, when are you going to give that thing to me?
You should try it. I think it's up your alley. It's a lot of fun. It has got a lot of stuff going on. It gives you three different flavors of delay. It does an echo rec. It does a space echo. It does an echo plex. And then it has the Wave switch. I think it's called the Wave switch.
Mm-hmm.
Where you press that, it's a momentary switch, and all the settings go to 10.
Oh, nice.
And you know, it self oscillates, it goes into craziness. And then there's another switch.
What does that switch do?
That turns on a reverb.
Ooh.
A very simple but very pleasing, like straightforward reverb. So this thing is just ambience in a box. Like,
it's basically the size of two pedals. This could solve all of my delay and reverb pedals.
It is pretty insane. It sounds great. This is not a tap tempo pedal. This is a let your echo and your delay kind of run away and do crazy things kind of delay. It's a dual delay, which means that there are two time knobs.
That is what dual means.
Right. So you have your first time knob, which controls your first hits of delay, and then the second knob controls the time of the second hits of delay. I know, right?
Right.
So you can get, if you really sit there and play with this, you can get some really interesting kind of textural, you know, like the delays running away from you sort of sounds. Like, say you want the first delay to be have a longer time signature.
Sure.
And then the second delay has a quick time signature. So each mm-hmm. long delay has like these little repeats after it.
Right.
Yeah. Or vice versa. You can get crazy. You can get them really close to each other and then they kind of wander a little bit, which is really fun.
Oh.
So it's just a ton of fun. I've been messing around with it. Check our YouTube channel today and every day after today to see my demo of it.
Absolutely.
We've had a ton of fun doing all of these Fox pedals. They're beautiful. They sound great. I have no complaints about these pedals. Totally great time. This episode is also brought to you...
By who?
By Ren and Cuff.
Ooh.
They want us to talk about the Super Fat Phuk pedal.
I think it's Phuk. Like Phuk? Phuket?
Super Fat Phuk?
Yes.
It's spelled Phuk. Not clear on the pronunciation of that. So you'll have to figure it out yourself. This thing, I haven't shown it to you, Steve.
But you haven't.
It is a lot of fun. I've been playing with it. It's not in the garage. It's up in the music room.
Dude.
Is that what
that email was about?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so this thing is a boost pedal.
Okay.
Basically, Ren and Cuff had two boost pedals. They combined it down into one, and they discontinued the original two. Because one was specific to bass and one was specific to guitar.
Right.
And they were two knob boosts.
I was reading about that. Okay.
Or one knob boost, I think. Don't quote me on that. So they they combined them down to be a three knob boost, which sounds great. This thing's right up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
It's a JFET and a germanium boost. So
I'm going to pretend like I know what those words mean.
So you can dial... It's got a knob for germanium clipping. So you can get a drive out of it if you want. It's got the fat knob, which dials the EQ basically, so you can get bright or you can get really bassy with it. So you could use it on guitar or bass. You could make your guitar sound more bassy. You can make your bass sound brighter or anything in between.
I think what you meant to say there is you can make your bass sound more guitar-y.
Sure. And then it has your level knob, which is, you know, what you expect. It's your boost. I've really been loving playing with this thing. It's not like one of these boost pedals where there's, you know, 360 dBs of boost on tap. It's more subtle, which I think is more appropriate for guitar use, because I hate it when it's like you've got that one knob on your boost pedal, and if you tweak it, you know, a fraction of a degree, then you're out of the range you want to be in. This is more subtle. You can really dial in for that boost that you want to have when you want to be louder. Or if you want to push another drive section harder, you put it before a drive section. I think it's really great. It's beautiful. Check out Ren and Cuff. Look them up online. Check out our demo of this pedal, because I'm going to do a demo of this one as well. Probably up today. I'm in the demo business these days.
You are in the demo business.
Which is going to be one of our topics
at the end of the episode. I am riding your coattails.
Oh man, it's been crazy. Yeah. All these demos. So yeah, big thanks to Fox Pedals and Ren and Cuff. We're super excited to just be having all these sponsors lined up for the show.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like we're advertising. This isn't like other podcasts where it's like, oh, let us tell you about this underwear company.
I will tell you, dude, I'm using Harry's razors.
But don't advertise Harry's razors right now.
I will say,
make them pay for it.
For our new listeners, when we sponsor stuff, these are companies, at least for now, that we really believe in. We are using these products. You go to our YouTube channels. We're doing our demos.
But also,
in previous weeks, we've talked about companies that we are subscribed to or we are planning on subscribing to.
Uh-huh.
We believe in these products. We've used these products with our own hands. We give you reviews.
Yeah.
If we don't like a product, sucks to be that company. They gave us money and we dissed them.
Yeah. If you go back and listen to everything we've ever done, there have been products that we've covered that we were honest about their shortcomings.
Yeah. I feel like I need to add chaos to our little tagline, because welcome to 60 Cycle Hum.
Right. But the point I was getting to is like, if we're doing ads for gear, it's like just another extension of our show, because it's what we're going to talk about anyways.
Right. Right.
So it's like, I would talk about these pedals anyways, because they're really cool. Definitely go check them out. Check out our demos. Let's jump in. You know what? I'm gonna grab a drink.
Okay, I'm gonna do a little what's new.
You do what's new while I get a drink.
Because I don't think we really covered this. I'm looking back through my notes. I didn't do it in 102. I didn't do it in 101. I didn't do it in 99. I'm gonna talk about the EHX Crayon.
Oh, nice.
We've done our demo of it. It's been up on the page for a while. We actually did a guitar demo and a bass demo. And by we, I mean Ryan. But I bought the EHX Crayon. I got it from the Sam Ash in San Diego. I don't know why Guitar Center isn't carrying these. Musician's Friend, as far as I know, isn't carrying these. I don't know if there's some issue between EHX and way to smash your mic, dude. Between EHX and the Guitar Center Musician's Friend corporate world.
A lot of times, Guitar Center doesn't carry things because they don't pay their bills.
So I got the EHX Crayon from Sam Ash, and I know Rogue Guitar Shop is carrying it. Sweetwater carries it. Pretty much everyone except Guitar Center is carrying it.
Watch, I line up a Guitar Center sponsorship at NAMM.
We're never going to line up a Guitar Center sponsorship.
This is the episode that airs directly after NAMM.
Here's what's going to happen. We're going to line up a Gibson sponsorship at NAMM, and then what they want is for us to go back and add in the gift on our Gibson 2016 episode.
Oh my gosh.
Where we say, this episode is brought to you by Gibson. So anyway, I got the HX Crayon. I'm actually holding it in my hand right now.
Uh-huh.
It's got volume, it's got gain, it's got bass, it's got treble. I really like this as kind of an all-around drive.
Yeah.
It's replacing a Tube Screamer on my board, a Tube Screamer style pedal.
Sure, sure.
I should say. The crayon's not good enough that it is irreplaceable.
Right.
But I really like it.
It is a really solid all-around, try a few different flavors of drive pedal. It goes from... It'll go all the way clean.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it'll dial up and give you a decent amount of dirt.
Yeah. So here's what I like about it.
Okay, you describe it.
Here's what I like about it. It's a really solid low to mid drive pedal.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a ton of gain on tap, both clean gain and dirt, or not really dirt, just clean volume. So this is good and bad. If I roll the gain all the way down and turn the volume up to about 12 o'clock, it's a fun boost. If I put the gain up to about 9 o'clock and roll the volume down to about maybe like 9:30, it's a nice low drive, and that's what I'm using it for. The bass and treble knobs are pretty wide ranged. So you can get a lot of tones in terms of EQ settings.
Yeah, totally. You can go bright or you could go dark. Yeah. Or you can
And
go
as
in
a
between.
Boost, that's actually really cool to be able to boost. Like, okay, I want to boost, but I want to boost more low end. I want more of a dark boost.
Yeah.
Or I want more of a treble boost. Like, you can kind of dial that those sorts of things in. What I don't like about it is that, at least with my guitars so far, the gain knob's not super versatile.
The gain structure on it is interesting. That's what I was going to get to. And you pointed this out to me. Like I said, it'll go all the way clean. And then, what would you say, around 11 o'clock to noon, it kind of dimes out how much gain you have.
Yeah, I feel like when I've run this, I run it at about 9 o'clock to get kind of like a light drive. Almost, I dare say, like what... If you've watched a lot of YouTube videos, what is probably sticking in your mind as the ideal clone tone, drive-wise, in terms of saturation.
Yeah.
That's where the crayon, I think...
That kind of light, fizzy, saturated
exactly.
drive.
Exactly. That's right around 9 o'clock. That's where I ran it, 9 to 10 o'clock. I feel like... Anything above that, you're adding more compression.
Yeah.
You're getting a ton more sustain.
Uh-huh.
It's an awkward sentence. You're getting a bunch of additional sustain, a bunch of additional compression, but you're not necessarily like adding dirt. Like, you're not going from like, okay, at 9 o'clock you're at Tube Screamer, at 3 o'clock you're at Rat. It's more like at 9 o'clock you're at Tube Screamer, at 3 o'clock you're at Tube Screamer plus compressor.
Absolutely. Like, it is like if you just strum a power chord and with the 9 o'clock setting and then compare it to the all the way up setting, you're not going to hear really much difference in the gain structure. It's not going to sound like a heavier drive, but what you're going to notice is that note sustains for much longer. So I wonder if there is some kind of compressor structure within the design of the pedal. Or if that's just...
I think that's just
the way it works.
The way it increases its gain.
Yeah. So
So because of that, actually, I'm really looking forward to using it on bass because I haven't really found a good bass overdrive that retains low end. And I know we did the bass demo. And again, by we, I mean you, which is probably the last person who should be doing a bass demo.
It is pretty rough. What? What do you need?
Whiskey.
Okay. Here you go. Yeah, you know, I posted the guitar demo on Reddit, and I got a couple people ask for a bass demo. And I was like, you know what? What the heck? I have the rig still set up in my music room. All I got to do is set up a bass amp, put mic on it, and grab my bass. I am not a bass player.
You use the highest quality bass amp, too.
I have a Behringer bass amp that I inherited from my brother because it wouldn't sell on Craigslist.
No, you inherited it from your brother because he decided he wanted to be a saxophone player.
And then I have as a base a short scale Slammer series by Hamer that I actually really like and I think gives very nice bass tones. But the main deficit in this whole setup is that I was the one playing bass. Sure. I'm not a bassist by any respect. I keep a bass setup around for basic recording needs and for fun. I'm not disciplined in bass at all.
I feel like for a demoer, like you're a more ideal bass player than I am because I'm such a pocket player.
Sure.
That I feel like people want to hear like somebody like, oh, what? I want to know what this sounds like on a bass line. If you want to hear someone play four on the floor for 5 minutes straight,
yeah,
you know, I'm your guy.
Right. So anyways, I think my demo does a decent job of showing off the tones with a bass anyways. I think both pedals worked very well with bass.
Yeah, yeah.
By both
pedals, you mean the
crayons.
DHX crayon and JHS crayon.
Exactly. They both do different things. But the EHX has a decent amount of low end on tap. Like you dime that low knob and bring back the high knob and you're in bass territory.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And then you use that, you push that drive up into sustain and you're doing, you know, like cello type stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
It's definitely a very open drive. I really like it. Like I said, I'm not going to say it can't be knocked off. But as soon as I plugged it in, I was like, this is going to be a mainstay on my board until I find something to knock it off. And I'm not necessarily in a hurry.
Yeah. It's one of these pedals that I think if it had come out, let's say, like 2001, 2002, it would have blown people's minds. But
sure.
There's so much on the market these days that does a lot of what it does.
Right.
In what some people would consider better ways, but I'm going to say different ways.
Yeah.
Because it's all subjective. What it does do better is that it is like $60, right?
Yeah. I was 69 out the door, basically.
69, dude.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
It's for $69. If you need a drive that does what this does, why not give it a shot, man? And the JHS crayon, I thought that thing was incredible for bass. I want to loan it to you and you can use it for bass.
Okay.
It's got a really big bottom end on it.
Technically, we both own it, so it's okay for me to keep things. Like,
100%.
Not everything that we own has to stay here.
That's true. Well, you've got the Civic Crown right now, and
I have
got
the Civic Crown. And I've got the Afterneath.
You've got this. You've got the Sacred Cow.
I do have the Sacred Cow.
Yeah.
So I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know. You know that you can grab the stuff anytime you want. I'm never going to say no.
I'm just happy with it. If you're looking for, you know, someone described the crayon as the EHX crayon as a very vanilla overdrive, but and it is. But you know what?
It's trying to please a lot of people. So it's not a specific sound.
Yeah.
So in that way, yeah, it is vanilla.
Vanilla is usually an insult, and I realize vanilla usually means like it's plain. You know, it's boring. It's whatever. But Adam actually told me, Adam Powell, who's been on our show before, has told me before he's an ice cream aficionado.
Sure. Yeah.
And what he has said before is whenever he tries a new ice cream, he just gets vanilla.
Yeah.
Because if you can't do vanilla right, then you have no business doing anything else.
Sure. Vanilla, people think of vanilla. I love that we're talking about vanilla as a flavor now, not as a description of a pedal. People think of a vanilla as a lack of flavor.
Yeah.
And it's not a lack of flavor.
No, it's a very specific flavor.
It's a very specific ingredient that has a very specific taste, and you can do it right and wrong.
Yeah.
But it is a flavor that almost everyone is fine with.
Yeah. Bottom line, if you're looking for an overdrive and you're looking at all these different overdrives and you don't know what you want, cruise over to youtube.com/60cyclehum and check out our demo of Crayon versus Crayon.
This is the demo pushing episode. Everything we talk about is leading back to demos.
So.
Oh, where are you going?
Over here.
Steve's going over there. He's going to go to the bathroom, I think. I'll pause. All right, so where were we? Should we just jump into ads?
Let's jump into some ads.
Wrap it up. Well, not wrap it up, but you know what I mean.
Let's wrap it up. This song's brought to us by...
Shut up. I'm just kidding. All right, first ad. Oh, man, I'm going to pull this up. Did you put it in Google Drive?
I did. It's like PNG, whatever, 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 or Imgur...
And by anyway, I'm just going to pull it up on my phone.
Yeah, just do it on your phone.
This was sent in to us by Rich Calhoun.
Rick Calhoun.
I wrote his
you
name
You can't
down.
Be that illiterate.
I wrote it down really sloppy.
Oh, my.
I wrote an H instead of a K.
It's bad when you can't read your own handwriting.
We're having garage drinks out here. This is the good stuff.
Got to get some burritos after this.
I am not opposed at all. All right. Sounds incredible. He sent this in to the Facebook group at our request. I was asking for some more ads to kind of pepper in the mix. Excuse me. I had a little burp there. Thanks to the garage drinks. This is titled Pedal Board Project, $30 in Hudson. Selling an old bass guitar case that I converted into a pedal board. I recently upgraded to a new board and no longer need this. If anybody is looking at putting together a board, you can get started cheap. I already have Velcro applied to the inside lining. I have included a picture of my old setup to give you an idea of what can be done with this. What do you think about this? First impression, Steve?
Well, honestly, when you first sent this to me and when this was posted on the group, I was like, why are we going to talk about this? But I'm looking at it again, and this guy's taking a bass, half of a bass case.
He's got the lid, too.
Oh, does this come with the lid?
If you look at the ad, the lid, like, it has the detaching hinges, like, on the salvage cases. So you can put the lid back on it.
So if this includes the lid, for $30, that's a pretty good price.
Yeah.
Because worst case scenario... I'm going to put the lid and the bottom back together.
And have a base case.
I'm going to drive a nail through the hinges and I'm going to have a base case.
Right, right.
But more importantly than that, this thing fits. He's got 10 pedals in the picture.
He could squeeze way right. more.
He could
this
squeeze
thing.
Way more. And when I say 10 pedals, this includes a power strip.
Mm-hmm.
This includes some sort of power supply. I can't necessarily tell what this
He's got two wall warts, and I think that he's just got everything daisy-chained off of him.
Okay, so he's got these two wall warts, and he's
got... Oh, is that a power supply there?
It's not a power supply. What it is it's some sort of cable thing. He's got a bunch of cables plugged into it.
It looks like it's a snake setup. He's probably running that to the FX loop on his amp.
And then he's got 10 pedals on this.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to just do all pedals and you had smaller pedals or you were a little better with space conservation, you could fit, I don't know, 16 pedals
maybe
on this?
That's the number I was literally thinking. I was going to say 15 or 16.
This picture's got 10.
Yeah.
One of those is a DD20. There are a lot of gaps.
There's a lot of space on here. But this is... It's not the kind of pedal board where it's got a false top so you can run everything underneath. It's
sure.
a flat style board, obviously, because it's a base case that's been converted. Honestly, for $30, that's less than you'd spend on Velcro to make your own.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And here's what you do. This is base case. If he gives you the top, you can reconnect the top. Find some way to do like a quick release system. You expand this or shrink this down to whatever size you need. You cut the foam out of the top of the case.
Okay.
So you can close this regardless of what size pedal you
use. Right. I have a feeling everything's going to fit just fine.
I think a lot of this is done already. This is in Hickory.
Yeah.
I don't know where... Do you know where Hickory is?
No. But
didn't you do any work, Ryan? Do I have to do everything?
Yeah, I wish you would.
Oh, good Lord, son.
But yeah, I think it's a... I think he pulled this off really tidy. It's big, but I think this is a really nice like home board. I don't know if I would take this out on the road because I don't use that many pedals, I don't think, when I play out. But you could probably play it out. But I think this is like you've got a bunch of pedals. You need a way to organize them at home and have them all run. this is a great way to do it for $30.
This is in Hickory, North Carolina, which means that there is a chance that before this episode airs, Kyle Smith has already bought this.
Yeah, there's always that chance. And then he's going to gut it and put a Tesco in it, right?
I will. When I first saw that it was in Hickory, I was like, how did Hickory...
He's the one who tried to sell Tesco, right?
And he sold two of them.
Yeah.
I think they're both sold now. Regardless of who does or does not listen to this show, who is or is not a Instagram sensation.
Yeah.
This is not... Honestly, like when I first saw this, I thought, I can't even process this. This is beyond stupid. When I look at it again, I'm like, you know what? This isn't terrible.
You think it's going to be dumb, but then the more you stare at it, the smarter it gets. And I'm starting to think like, maybe I got to be on the lookout for us, you know, maybe not a bass case, but like a guitar case.
Well, this is a hard shell, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what it is. It's actually not bad. So thanks, Rick, for sending this in.
Yeah, I think it's a great ad, and I think someone should go buy this for $30.
My paradigm has shifted. My game has changed. The industry is disrupted.
Oh my gosh. Oh man. All right, let's get into this sound booth.
By the way, guys, industry disruption is no longer a thing. It's now called a paradigm shift.
Oh great. I don't even know what you're talking about, and I'm already sick of it.
The first time I was exposed to the word paradigm was like a Dilbert comic strip, like maybe 20 years ago.
I think this to go.
Paradigm is a fun word.
Where did this go?
What are you looking for?
The sound booth.
I don't know. You kept talking about this, and I never looked for it in Drive, so I don't know if it actually is there.
Oh,
see, we've got Woody Woodcaster, no, Toilet did... Dano, Restored Takamine that we talked about last week, Genters, A Fret Job. I don't see this, dude. What?
I was looking right at it.
Are you sure it's in Drive?
If this isn't in here, then it was a ghost ad.
Oh,
there
my
it is.
Gosh.
Local pickup only. Is the name of it.
Oh, there it is.
And it's from The Inboxer.
The Inboxer! All right, Adam Dolhanek.
I picked this just because... Because
you want a sound booth?
It's a hilarious thing.
It's kind of insane.
It's kind of an insane thing to buy, but then I totally get it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I would love to have this if I had... I mean, I don't want to sound like... I'm not thankful for the house I live in. I'm very thankful, but
you don't have a sound booth.
My garage, I use it all the way,
but it's not a sound booth.
It's not a sound booth.
You've got a freaking mural of what the hell is that?
I've got surfboards on the wall. I've got
no, literally behind your surfboard wall. I think that is that's the 100-acre wood, dude.
It's supposed to be like a Keebler elf tree or something.
Is that
like
what... I think that's Al's house. We're in the 100-acre
one. So the previous owners put like this whimsical children's wallpaper up.
Yeah.
That has like the Keebler elf tree and like a forest scene. But anyways, I don't have room in my garage for this thing is what I'm trying to get at. If I had, you know, like a 3-car garage, I might be tempted to get something similar to this going on.
Right.
This is... barely a 2-car garage. Technically, it's like a 1.5-car garage.
Really?
Yeah.
You can't fit... Well, you've got a huge thing over here.
If you take everything out of here, you can kind of squeeze 2 cars in here. Which is like the complaint of this model house.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like this should be a 2-car garage, but because the work...
Right.
Why are we talking about this?
Okay. So anyways, this is an industrial-grade recording sound booth that was used in a jingle house in Los Angeles. All modular, only assembly needed, all parts included, 10 by 10 by 10. So this is basically the size of my music room, a 10 by 10.
I had a thought. It's not funny.
Then I don't want to hear it.
It goes like this. Jingle house, jingle house, jingle all the way.
This is a big 10 by 10. That's a full room. You can set up a drum kit in there. And have a couple of people standing around playing guitars and stuff.
You can fit a lot of things in 10 by 10 by 10.
I wonder how weatherproof it is. Can I put this in my backyard?
No. Maybe.
Local pickup in Los Angeles.
Here's how are you going to move a 10 by 10 by 10 room?
You disassemble it and you put it in the back of a truck.
Okay.
Are you taking a picture of the mural?
Yeah.
Man, $2,500 though. If this thing is weatherproof, it would be rad to have this in the backyard and have an extra room in the backyard. Be like a granny flat for $2,500.
You gotta rent that out.
Totally.
We got a bunch of friends who are always looking for
people coming into town and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we got a bunch of friends who are like, oh, my lease is up this week. I'm gonna be homeless. Can someone help me out?
My neighbors across the street, they built they have like an office shed, like a really nice one built right in their backyard. I think it cost them like $7,000 or something stupid like that. This is $2,500 and you can use it for recording. And it's on wheels. I've seen stuff like this on our local Craigslist that were smaller.
Yeah.
Like you go in there and there's enough room for you to hold your instrument and do your thing. This is like you put your whole band in there and record it, you know? That's neat.
It's, you know, it's the sort of thing where this is big enough to be functional. You know, usually when we see it on Craigslist, it's something that's like super hard actually to move. This is designed to be portable.
Yeah, it's supposed to take it apart. And I'm assuming it gives you some level of sound isolation is the idea.
Yeah.
So you can maybe set this up in your garage and practice drums without pissing off your neighbors.
Or your wife.
And you can do your recording in there and not, you know, have your day ruined by the ambulance driving by sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, like, if I had a house and it wouldn't like completely annoy my wife to have something like this, I would have built this in my backyard just because, like, you know, we talk about like you're primarily guitarist, I'm primarily bass player,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't say I dabble. I play guitar,
right?
You know,
you're a strings guy.
I'm a strings guy. I don't play anything besides guitar or bass.
you're into strings.
And, but as far as drums go, like I would say that I dabble in drums. Like I've recorded my own drum playing.
Sure.
The last Christmas Friends song I did, which Christmas Friends is a thing that we've done in the past where a bunch of people just submit Christmas songs.
You just broke the first rule of Christmas Friends.
Don't talk about Christmas Friends. But like I've recorded my own drum playing. Like it,
right.
My drum playing is okay enough that I can record it and
you
use
can
it.
Make a beat.
I can make a beat. If I had a house with a backyard, I could use a 10 by 10 by 10 space just so I could go out there and like smash on drums.
Sure.
Because like I really like the drums. I just don't, you know, in a 1,000 square foot condo where you're supposed to play the drum. Real,
you know, I've got a house and I was hosting a drum set here for a while.
Yeah.
And it became a burden because of how much space it takes up.
Because of people who would come over and play drums?
No, just because you think like, oh, I can put this in the corner of this room, it's fine. And then you realize as the months go on, this realistically takes up a whole room.
Yeah. And also like then you have like a Thanksgiving get together and my child is trying to sleep and someone who is a guest at that Thanksgiving get together says, hey, I'm going to go play the drum set.
This sounds like a very specific situation. Oh, yeah. Let's move on to the next ad. I think we've covered
this. We probably should before I insult someone who I'm friends with.
I know.
I'm just kidding. I love you.
I mean,
you.
Who else are you going to insult rather than the people that you
if
love?
If you can't insult the friends you love, then insult the friends you're with.
So I don't have anything to say about this pedal other than this is probably a really great deal, right?
$35. We're talking about a Devdiver Hyperion Fuzz.
Uh-huh.
This is in Nashville. I'm assuming this is one of the original finishes. I will say that Devdiver is back on the market as Fuzz Goddess, and her prices are killer.
Are they good?
Some of the stuff I've seen are like super low.
I like the way you said that.
It just
what was the model of this fuzz again?
This is the Hyperion.
I'm looking on Reverb.
Here we are. We're talking on Reverb.
Whoa, Reverb. There's one for $195.
Holy smokes. Is it the same one?
Yeah, same artwork.
I don't know exactly what's going on.
Here's one for 75.
This is a super complicated story because you had Devi Ever, and then Devi Ever sold their brand to Dwarfcraft. Uh-huh. So officially, the current Devi Ever stuff that's on the market is made by Dwarfcraft, and then Devi, which I don't know, she goes by Grace.
Let's not get into...
No, I'm not getting into that, but the person who runs this company, her name is Grace, and she runs a company called Fuzz Goddess, and I think she pretty much sells through Etsy. Last I checked, she might have her own website now, but a lot of it is through Etsy. In fact, for what it's worth, I'm on fuzzgoddess.ticktail.com.
Reverb says that the price guide is $55 to $85. So this is still a great deal, but it's not what the other person is asking.
The only point that I was trying to make is that I've always thought that like 70, 80 bucks, whatever, for a one or two knob fuzz was super expensive. And then all of a sudden I realized, like maybe 2 or 3 months ago, that's a really reasonable price if the pedal is good.
If it's the pedal that you end up using, you know, I don't know anyone that overcharges for what a pedal is if it's the pedal that you end up using, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if it becomes a permanent part of your rig and you use it all the time, what's the value of that, you know? So, you know, $100, $150, you know, $200, $300. That's the range for most pedals. Obviously, we used to be young. We're dads now. We're old
and
men.
Dumb.
Young and dumb. You know, I remember being like just sweating over and wringing my hands over buying a $40 used pedal from the pawn shop. You know, I understand the frustrations of the prices of these things. No one's really overcharging for these things. The market puts them where they belong.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other subject. But anyways, $35.
Seriously, like if there are people listing DS1s for $35.
I can't find a metal zone in San Diego under under 40. This is probably I honestly haven't done a ton of research into the sound of Devi Ever pedals. I'm sure as a fuzz goes, it probably sounds great. You need it to fit your sound. So figure out if it fits your sound. But for $35...
For $35, I just buy this. I don't ask questions.
If you live close to this, go freaking get it. I mean, it's probably already gone.
This was sent to us by Joe Pekarski.
Yeah.
I don't know if he bought it. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. Nashville's a big city.
Yeah. It's probably gone by now, for sure. Or the person got flooded with emails, and then they put it up for $150 and then had to lower the price down to $80, and now it's gone.
It happens before.
But anyways, you know, there's all kinds of drama around the brand. If you want to learn more about it, we're not going to talk about it because we don't want to go down that road. But it's pretty easy for you to get on the internet and figure it out for yourself.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next ad.
Let's do this last ad. This is our fourth one. I want to do this one specifically because of the person who it's from. Hi, Jono.
Oh, hey, Jono.
Hey, Ryan. I heard you made fun of a kid.
I didn't make fun of a kid. Oh, man. Should we play the clip from it? I'm going to play the... No, I'm not. He asked us not to. He asked us to forget about it.
Yeah, and it's fine. I'm actually really excited. We have a Google Voice. I call it the hotline because I know when that hotline blings, it can only mean one thing. And Ryan's just like, what the hell did you just say? But
no idea.
We have a little Google Voice set up at 619-363-HUMM. So we can take your voicemail. Sometimes we play them on the show. Sometimes we don't.
Well, we set it up so that people could call in like with questions, and then we would like do like a phone call format.
Literally, we probably went like 6 months between calls, and then Jono found it and was like, "I'm gonna call in."
Well, he was going
and
back
try to troll you guys.
Going back and listening to old episodes. Yeah, he called in and like tried to tell like a pretty like. Kind of a rough joke.
Yeah.
And then he...
Which ended with, oh, is there any way I can delete this?
And then he called the next day and apologized for
no,
it.
No, it was 2 days later. I give him props for at least giving him 48 hours.
Okay. So he called up and apologized for it. And it's like, don't play that. So we won't.
I wasn't going to. Actually,
I got a big laugh out of it.
Right away, you were like, this has to be a joke. I was really concerned. I was like, Ryan, dude, well, take the podcast. We're going to get sued.
Let's not talk about it too much because no one else is in on the joke. But yeah, it was. I knew it was a joke right away. I got a good laugh out of it. I played it for my wife and for Adam. So anyways, now we have a phone line if you want to call it and leave messages.
Again,
we actually got a
619.
Okay.
That's the area code for most of San Diego.
Uh-huh.
3-6-3. H-U-M.
Okay, so we got another phone call this week.
We did?
From someone. You didn't see that?
I guess not.
From someone saying that they wished that there was more Adam Powell on the show.
No, that I think that was him.
Was it him again?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll see what we can do. We had him on as an official guest way back. So people are asking for him. We'll get him back on when we can.
Because I know when that hotline blings.
He's going to be up at NAMM helping us.
Oh, is he going to come up?
Friday and Saturday is the plan to do some video stuff.
Because last time I talked to you, that was kind of up in the air.
It's still technically up in the air. He doesn't have a ride. This episode, obviously, airing after NAMM. So who knows if he made it or not. We'll find out. Should we talk about this ad at all?
Yeah, if he needs a ride, he can get a ride from me. But again,
he wants to be up there early Friday.
Oh,
so
then I guess he's got to drive himself.
Yeah, he might find a ride or he might take the train or something. We'll figure it out. So this guitar looks like Texas or the flag of Texas or Puerto Rico is.
I think it's Texas.
I always get mixed up with these flags with the blue, white, and red
star state
and a star. I have no idea if this is.
This is what it says.
You know what's unique about this guitar?
It says it's one-of-a-kind custom guitar, and it's in Burleson, Texas, and it's got a bomb on it, and it says one-of-a-kind custom guitar. Want to trade for quality acoustic or 12-string.
Look at the output jack on this thing. It's upside down.
Is it?
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's kind of interesting looking.
Yeah, that just means somebody was drunk when they were putting this guitar together.
It's got a Strat-style output jack because it's a Strat-style guitar.
Yeah, it's a Strat-style guitar that somebody took the pickguard off of but put all the screws back in.
Yeah. No, I think the pickguard is painted.
Is it?
That's what's going on.
That'd be cool.
So, yeah, kind of a neat Texas theme. Oh, I bet this is, look at the headstock. I bet it's one of those SX guitars.
That's the SX headstock.
Yeah, it's got kind of.
I've never owned one, but you have.
It's got that bottle opener shape on the end.
Gotcha.
Instead of the fender shape.
All right.
I don't know. I don't have anything else to say about this. We just wanted to talk about good old Jono.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
I always thought his name was Jono because I thought it was short for Jonathan, but
yeah.
On the voicemail he said Jono, so we're going to go with that.
So thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Thanks for going back and listening to all our
thanks
old episodes.
Thanks for being from San Diego and then moving to wherever the hell you are in Texas.
Well, let's tackle the topic. Do we want to find this thing to quote it word for word?
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
I've got it right here.
Oh, good.
Come on.
Ah, you're the...
It was there and then it disappeared.
You suck.
Dang it.
Hey, Ryan.
Yeah.
Want to hear a joke?
No.
Okay, good, because I don't know one.
Okay, now I got to get back to the group.
Here we are scrolling through our phones on air. Why are you guys listening to this?
I know, right?
Seriously.
We're the worst podcast.
we're the only podcast. That's the problem.
We're the only podcast? What do you mean?
When you go on iTunes and you look for podcasts, you only find us.
We're the only one, apparently. Okay, I found it.
Okay, good.
Where is it? I found your post where you were asking for topics, and now I've got to find this post from Casey. Okay, here it is.
Okay, good. Oh, it's from Casey?
From Casey Babcock.
I heard he's taller than us.
What? I don't think so.
Maybe he's only taller than me.
I don't know. I don't remember him being that tall.
He says he's 6'3".
Okay.
Just read the topic.
Okay. Gear demos by truly great guitarists and the effect it has. There have been so many times I hear a demo of some sloppy ass playing a great pedal that gives a highly inaccurate review of a good pedal. They add tons of effects and crap or carp to it so that it isn't... This is really weirdly worded.
Carp, well, he's in Louisiana. I don't think so they have the greatest public education system.
And on the other end of the spectrum where it really doesn't matter what the insane chop master plays, it all sounds good. So what I think he's trying to say is that, you know, sometimes there's demo guys who are so good that it doesn't matter what they play. It's going to sound good because
right.
they've dialed it in for what they're going to play just right. And they are never going to play, you know, the thing that sounds bad or off as they're showing off the pedal or the product. And then there's guys who are so bad and so sloppy that they can't show off the good qualities of the pedal. Or maybe they're bad at you know, setting up their rig, or they're trying to get fancy and so they mix effects onto it that don't need to be there. Or maybe they overcompress the signal or something like that. All these things are pitfalls of the demo industry.
Sure. Well, you know, this kind of touches on what we talked about when we really started the Gas and Ghost series, which was like, so we just released like a week ago the DOD grunge video.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are official DOD grunge videos, but one of the issues with those kinds of pedals, these pedals that are like $40 a piece, right?
Yeah.
Is that...
Most of them are like iPhone videos.
Yeah, most of these are like iPhone videos. And not just iPhone videos, but they're like iPhone 3GS videos.
They're, you know, they're smartphone videos, or they're someone took a video with their point and shoot in a dark room without a microphone.
Right.
So there's a lot of quality issues for pedals that are being demoed that are older or not... supported by some kind of marketing structure.
And let's be honest, like, if you don't have a, no matter how good of a player you are, if you don't have a good recording setup, you're not doing the manufacturer any favors.
No, all you're showing is that it turns off and on and makes a sound because people can't really hear the specifics. The thing that drives me nuts with demos is when the player doesn't play in the style that I play.
Sure.
So I can't hear what it's actually going to sound like. And that's why I only play our demos in the style that I play.
I have heard that with criticisms of other videos where guys are like, oh, I listened to the video of this pedal, but like the guy was just playing blues.
Right.
And I'm like an, you know, insert genre here player.
Right.
Like I don't sound anything like whichever king is your preference.
I have kind of a set of riffs that I'd noodle around with.
Right.
When
one
I'm
of
doing...
them is Thunderstruck.
Oh yeah, sure. Every now and then. You know, I do some deedly deedlies. I do some, you know, kind of just scale work or whatever. It's pretty sloppy. I'm on definitely on the sloppy end of the playing spectrum for demos. But then I try very hard to show off the full range of each knob or switch of a pedal when I demo it. Because
right.
that's the thing I'm always curious about when I'm watching a demo. Is like, I don't want to hear the perfect good settings that the really good guitarist found.
Absolutely.
On, you know, this pedal that perfectly fits this cover song. I want to hear the full range of it. I want to know if I want to invest in everything that this pedal is.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not going to claim that as a demo player that I'm the best or even good. I know who I am as a player and it's
right.
not perfect.
Well, and you know, that lends, you know, that's kind of an interesting point, maybe accidentally, is that like there's a difference between being a sloppy player and making a sloppy demo.
That's true.
If I made a demo on my phone of me playing guitar, it would be a sloppy demo.
Sure.
If I came, not just because of my rig, but because I'm a sloppy player.
Right.
If I came over and made a demo on your rig,
right.
on your setup here, It would be a sloppy player making a really good demo.
Right. Because
you know what I mean?
Even though the playing is sloppy, you can still hear and understand the qualities of the pedal.
Yeah. It's not that the console's fault that I suck at guitar.
Right, right.
That's just what comes through, and you're going to listen to it and be like, yeah. No.
Yeah. I actually got a comment on, because I did that Topanga demo.
Right.
The Gas and Go of the Topanga a while back. I got a comment where someone said thank you for, you know, palm muting the low strings and digging into it to get the drip, because most of the demos out there for this, people aren't playing it in that style.
Right.
And that's like the number one reason why I bought that pedal, is to get, you know, the surf rock drip.
Right. What is Topanga? Topanga's like a city near Malibu, right?
Yeah, it's like a coastal town.
So really, like, if you're using the Catalan bred Topanga for anything, I don't want to say anything other, because I don't want to pigeonhole it.
Right.
But the idea is that, like, it's named after a specific sound that they were trying to achieve, and everything else, I wouldn't say is accidental,
sure,
but it's beyond the scope of the specific purpose it was designed for.
It is very specifically an emulation or an attempt to capture like the spring reverb unit sound that
exactly
gives you kind
right,
of like
right
the vintage reverb, you know, oldies kind of sound. And you can use it in a lot of different ways. You can use it for like country picking. You can use it for kind of Motown sounds. Anything that kind of came out of that era. But specifically, I think the people most interested in it are surf guitar players, and I tried to cater to that because that's
right
who I am anyways. But there's a lot of other stuff like that. There's pedals that I have trouble demoing, and I'm not going to say which ones, but it's hard for me to communicate those different settings when I'm
sure
doing them. And
well, I know for a long
I try my darndest with the demos to present an honest sound of what is coming.
Exactly.
What I heard when I was playing it in the room, like, I don't dump a ton of compression on the audio. I don't do any EQing. As close as I can get to just miking it, recording it, and then putting it in the video is where I like to keep it. I use two microphones every time. I use an SM57 and an SM58. Sometimes I need to fatten one of those up a little bit to make it sound the way it sounded when I was in the room, basically.
Sure.
So I'll throw a tiny little bit of compression on one of them, and I'll usually leave the other one completely alone. You know, demoing is really interesting. I feel like we keep talking about this whole episode, but we've definitely hit a place. You know, you keep saying that I'm doing it, but as an organization, we've hit a place where we're doing a lot of them. And it's starting to pay off, because, you know, we started doing the Gas and Goes to show off our personal collections and other things that we come across.
Yeah.
And it's become a thing where, you know, companies look at it as like, oh, we want to send you product to do one of those.
Sure.
So that we can have, you know, a demo of maybe a product that doesn't need a full launch video, but we want to have a different take on it, sort of thing. I've been having a lot of fun doing them, that's for sure. And being able to have a setup at home where I can, you know, walk into my music room, turn on the camera, turn on a light, and just rip into a pedal and record it for 10 or 15 minutes and then bust out a demo has been a lot of fun. I literally have, I think, 20 of these videos recorded on my computer, just ready to be edited, and we're going to release them a week.
Something like that.
Until we run out. We might never run out.
Mm-hmm. Who asked us a stage diving question?
I don't remember.
I can't find it.
So did we tackle that question enough?
I think so. Oh, you know, we didn't really talk about the flip side of that. I've actually heard this as a complaint about Andy.
Sure, from Pro Guitar.
And actually, a lot of people, when the guys over at Chicago Music Exchange did this Spectre demo.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people were surprised that they made the James Bond joke. Da-na, da-na, the Spectre.
That was a great demo,
that
by the way.
That was incredible.
Super great. My wife and I are always walking around doing that.
Oh, really?
Ba-da, ba-da! We didn't make that demo, obviously, but I am fully behind endorsing it.
That was
it.
Incredible. Go I watch love the it. Fact that Joel smashed that guy twice.
Joel's such a great guy.
But it's just the idea that there are guys out there, you know, it's hard with demos because you got to find something with good sound quality, but you know, with a guy like Andy at Pro Guitar Shop, or depending on your style, depending on who you are, one of the complaints I see all the time about guitar demos is, yeah, I wanted to know about this pedal, but all this guy did was play Stevie Ray Vaughan for 10 minutes. You know,
is that the complaint about Andy? He usually...
No, not about Andy, okay. But just about other demos.
He usually hits a really wide variety of songs.
There's Andy, there's Gear Man Dude, there's Lance over at Gear Talk, there's all of these different guys. Chappers and Lee, right?
Uh-huh.
Over at Anderton's. All of these different guys who are professional guitar players. Sometimes it's hard because if you're me, who is a garbage guitar player, I got the best text of my life on Monday. I got a text from the worship leader at our church who said, dude, you killed it on Sunday. And I'm primarily a bass player.
Uh-huh.
So anytime I play an electric guitar, I'm really like, oh my gosh, is this good?
Right.
Because I'm just really uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
So when I get a compliment, like it actually really means a lot to me because I'm just so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Some parts I'm less uncomfortable with, but there are moments where I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I know for a lot of people, probably a lot of people who listen to our show, when they listen to these guys who are when I say professional guitarists, like Rob Chapman over who does demos for Anderton's, is like a legit, like he makes money from playing music.
Right.
You know, there are different guys with different companies that make money for playing music. That is their primary way of making money.
Yeah.
It's hard to compare yourself to those guys.
Yeah.
You know, even Andy Oefling, who has done some work with Future Forestry, who's kind of a local band, I guess.
Yeah, they're a local band for us.
But they're pretty big. Fairly big, I guess. I don't know how you would describe them. It's hard to compare yourself to those guys. And I think sometimes there is a little bit of you're listening to a demo and when you're listening to a demo from a retailer, they're never going to put out a demo that sounds bad.
They're never going to show you the sound that just doesn't quite work. And you know, there's a place in the industry for all of these things. Obviously when JHS has us do a demo, we're not doing the only demo. They have they have their in-house demo that they do where they get top-notch guys to play, you know, to really play. And then they throw us pedals to demo to basically capture our audience and, you know, I hope to show, you know, other sides of their product. So anyways, I think for us, what we are really selling isn't obviously my guitar playing because it's
right.
Not, yeah. I get compliments. People say, oh, I love the way you did this or that. But my guitar playing isn't phenomenal compared to a lot of these guys. And it's not even really good compared to a lot of these guys.
The only compliment I've ever gotten on my guitar playing is you play a lot less notes than that other guy. You know who that other guy is, right?
It's me. Right. I play too many notes probably. And way too many pinch harmonics. obviously, the reason why we get demo work is because we have an audience. And that is our product, is you guys.
Thanks, guys, for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening and thanks for watching our demos. That's the reason why we get demo work. I'm completely honest with myself about that. No one cares if I play guitar or not, you know, outside of that. Also I think we have a really high quality of video and audio that we're working with. So that's nice too. I know that people who send us
stuff, almost like reverse engineered that, because it was like, let's just put together like a finished polished product and worry about the actual content afterwards. And I don't mean that in an insulting way.
Right.
Because, you know, I feel like we're in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, where we're audio quality wise, we're close to the top. And then, like, playing-wise, we're just wherever we fall, and that's okay.
I don't feel like... I feel like, playing-wise, I'm underneath Gear Man Dude. And then, video quality-wise, we're just underneath Pro Guitar Shop.
Right. Dude, I could go for a steak right now. No joke.
I don't know if I've got anything else to say about video demo stuff.
Then let's move on. We got this comment from Yegor Mackey, who sent us a song a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
We got to get that dude on the show.
Yeah, he's local.
He says, the perks and perils of stage diving and crowd surfing. My friend tripped on a monitor at Ty Segall last night and cut his shin, and a vein literally came out of the cut.
Oh,
just dangling and oozing.
Oh, no.
I literally stared at this for off and on for like half an hour and like tried to process what this scene
the
looked like.
The vein came out?
That's what he says.
What? I don't understand.
I hope he went to a hospital and got some stitches.
I don't understand, and I don't want to see a picture, and I don't want to understand. You know, these concert environments, it's roughhousing. These kids are roughhousing. What did your parents always tell you? Don't roughhouse. You're going to put an eye out or something. You know?
It's really nuts, you know.
And some people get way too into
it. The biggest, I guess, concert injury that I've ever known of is a friend of ours who I think cuts both of our hair.
Yes. Oh, I have someone new cutting my hair recently as a work trade. I know. He's giving me that look.
I need a haircut, dude. Help me out.
It's not for your hair. It's for my hair.
Well, I will pay cash money.
To me or to her?
To her.
Okay. It's Kathy.
Okay.
Yeah. You know her.
I know her.
Yeah. She's up in Escondido.
That's far.
Yeah, but it's closer than
and
our
it's
other
probably
friend.
More frequently. Anyway.
Yeah, you can go up there on a regular day.
Carry on.
Okay, so anyways. We have a good friend of ours who is a hairstylist who was at a show. This is our like our crazy like get destroyed at a show story.
And this happened like maybe 10 years ago, maybe
probably
more, like 12 years ago.
So she was in the front row of a show from what I understand.
It was a hardcore show. Is the band Beloved?
Back when there were hardcore shows.
Yeah. Right?
I
think she put a venue out of business.
Yeah. So anyways, the bassist decided that he was going to do the thing that people did back in that time period.
When you were hardcore.
When you were hardcore or screamo or scene or whatever, is to do the flip the bass or guitar around your back thing.
Right.
Which is always, that was always a hilarious move to me to watch, because you can tell when they're about to do it, because all of a sudden, like, they're looking around and they get their cable and they wrap it around their back just right, so that when it comes around the cable, it's not like the impression that they want you to get is like, whoa, he just did that like spontaneously. No, they're getting ready and they're getting geared up to do it. So then he flings. He goes to fling the bass around the back of his neck, where, you know, it's on the strap and goes around you. He flings it. Before it goes around his back, it flies off the strap and flies, the headstock of the bass flies directly into our friend's open smiling mouth.
Yeah.
Destroys her teeth.
Yeah.
Like, destroys her face.
Yeah.
It's horrendous. That's the story that we have of someone getting wrecked at, you know, like at a show sort of thing.
Yeah.
I've been in all kinds of mosh pits and stage diving situations, and I've never been hurt. I know Steve got kicked in the face once.
I did get kicked in the face once.
But that's not
it broke my glasses.
That's not a stage diving or mosh pit thing. That's like someone's a dick.
Someone's being a total douche.
Right. Every time I've been in a mosh pit, probably because I was at ska shows, it's been really friendly.
Oi, oi, oi.
And people just kind of like bumping shoulders and going in a circle and dancing and stuff. Like, I've been to hardcore shows whenever, you know, whenever the mosh pit started at hardcore shows, that was my cue to like backstep, you know, 5 or 6 steps to get to the edge of it.
Well,
you know, I would stand on the edge and be the guy who would elbow people back into the pit. You know,
it was always really cool to me. Back when we used to run the Park Gallery in San Diego, because somehow I ended up doing like 90% of the hardcore shows.
Hardcore?
I know. the hardcore shows, or at least it felt that way. Like
sure.
I did a lot of doom and hardcore.
Yeah.
And I was always doing them by myself. Thanks, guys. no, I know you and Adam did a lot of those things too.
I did a lot by myself over there. And Adam did too.
But I did a lot of shows where like if somebody fell down, like everyone was there to pick him up, and it was a really, really cool community to watch.
That's neat when you can be inside of a culture where that's the norm. I have been to shows where that's not the
norm. Yeah, for sure. And we played shows with your favorite band.
Yeah.
Where it was like, oh, we don't know what genre you guys are, but we don't like you. You're having way too much fun for music.
And then you got kicked in the face.
I got kicked in the face. I literally, like, I moshed by myself, got shoved in the back, shoved a dude who shoved me in the back. Like, I shoved him back for shoving me in the back. Then I got pushed down from the side and kicked in the face.
Yeah. That was bad.
I remember seeing that boot come to my face. And then my mom, who's a nurse, saying, why didn't you tell me? You could have died.
Oh my gosh.
From a concussion.
Oh, totally. You could die from getting kicked in the face. Totally. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And the people who were doing security at the place we were playing, I hesitate to call it a venue because it wasn't.
It was a church.
I wish I could have said that. but the security guys were like, did you come over? And they came over and they're like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I just got kicked in the face. And they're like, okay, dude, talk to you later.
Yeah, but at least your vein wasn't hanging out of your leg.
That's true.
Which is like,
it's having
the grossest thing I could imagine right now.
Is having your vein hang out of your leg because of something you did better or worse than getting kicked in the face for just being there?
I think I don't want either of them. I don't want to choose. Anyways, let's wrap this up. We're at 1:06. what are you doing?
I'm looking at my notes. I think we still need to talk about David Bowie.
Nah, we don't need to do that.
David Bowie.
Do you want to do it? Do you want to go another 15 minutes?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
This is Bowie calling Bowie.
Okay, David Bowie passed away a couple weeks ago now.
I was sad when it happened. I was more too. Sad about David Bowie than I was about Lemmy.
I was sad in different ways.
I think different ways is fair, but for me, like,
I think Lemmy is, I was sad and like, that's the personality that I always wanted to be, like a stage personality.
Right.
Bowie, I was sad in that this guy was a brilliant song.
I think I'm the opposite. I think, you know, if you think about it like steps, Lemmy was maybe 2 or 3 steps away from me, even though I'm a bass player.
Right.
Like, I've just never super into like the early heavy metal stuff. I was never really into Motorhead. I know Ace of Spades.
Right.
I love Motorhead. That's about it for me for Motorhead. Yeah. I really appreciated David Bowie as a songwriter.
Yeah. As a culture maker.
As a culture maker. Labyrinth, fantastic movie.
Gosh.
The Prestige, even though he only played a small role in that, fantastic movie.
Yeah.
So I think when Lemmy went, I went like, that really hurts the music community. When Bowie went, I was like, that hurts the community of the world.
Right, totally.
So what we're talking about here is there are people playing David Bowie in church.
Yeah, a guy on one of the praise and worship forums that Steve and I are on, he posted that he was going to play, his team was going to play a Bowie song in church that weekend after he passed away.
Right.
And he asked, is anyone else doing this? And it turned into
a dog pile.
Yeah, it was a horrendous thread where people were saying really awful things.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so much drama that it wasn't worth. There's churches that where, you know, like, I could imagine us doing this at our church. We probably won't, but like if we played, you know, like the entrance, we played as people are entering the sanctuary, just like, oh, the church is going to start in 5 minutes, and we play like a cover of a popular song.
Right. We don't really play breaker music, but a lot of churches do what they call icebreaker music.
Right, right.
Which is in the very like maybe 5 minutes before the actual formal church service starts, the band will play just a song of some sort.
So I think that's what this guy was talking about, is, you know, playing this, you know, kind of casually, not as part of the worship service, but as part as, you know, the entrance as people are getting into church and sitting down and stuff like that. Like, you know, paying homage to a cultural icon, even though, you know, I think people who took issue with it were taking issue with him as a person being used, his music being used in church for whatever reason.
Right.
You know, obviously he's, you know, he comes out of a glam rock background, all kinds of crazy stuff in the 70s, you know, who knows, you know, movie star, you know, all kinds of stuff about the guy, whatever.
Yeah, I think the closest we've come to it in our church is we haven't done it for a while, but we used to do Curtis Mayfield's People Get Ready.
Yeah, totally.
And again, that actually the version we played was technically the Rod Stewart version.
But you know what? As far as I'm concerned, none of that matters. I think,
sure.
I think, you know, as a person of faith, if Jesus was here today and he was in church and a band played that song as the sit down music, I don't think he would bat an eye and I don't think he would care.
Yeah.
I think it's a far different thing than, I think there's people in the praise and worship community who look at this stuff and like anything you do in a church service is your 100% representation of what you think God is.
And it's right.
If from my perspective, it's not, it's a church service isn't a holy thing to me. It's a meeting time of unholy people who share the same theology.
I think it's important for people to slow down and think about, like, is this something that we're doing in preparation for like a sacrament, like communion or baptism or something, or whatever, you know, confession, whatever, or is this something that we're doing like to set a mood?
Right.
And in the case of the guy who was doing this, I think it was more of a mood setter for a service. In which case, you know, it's really not that big of a deal, in my opinion.
And he picked a song that's fairly, like, there's nothing offensive about
it. Yeah, I don't remember what song he was doing. It was something like Strange Visions, I think was the name of the song.
I can't remember specifically. He posted up the lyrics. He's like, here's the lyrics, and there was, like, nothing about it. It's like, there's obviously no spiritual message.
It's not like he was doing Dance Baby Dance.
Right, or Rebel Rebel or something like that, you know? you know, and the point I made on the group is, like, you can't get offended by this if your pastor has ever done a cultural reference from the pulpit where he's talked about a freaking sports game or a movie or a TV show.
Which we will have in a couple of weeks because it'll be the Super Bowl.
Right.
Hopefully it'll be Kansas City versus Arizona because I've got some money to make.
You know what we never talked about?
What didn't we never talk about?
Your fantasy football thing.
We didn't talk about fantasy football. I won.
let's segue from the David Bowie conversation, because I think we addressed it. People are aware that this conversation happened, even though it doesn't matter that it happened.
Sure.
We put our two cents in. Obviously, we're our own people. We don't represent whole church.
I think my take home is, you got to do what's right for whatever the people are who are attending your church.
Right. And if you're attending a church and you don't like what the people are doing, complain if you want to, or just go find another church. There's no shortage of churches.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many permutations of churches. I could find churches that are preaching the exact same thing that what our church preaches in terms of like traditional,
right,
old school theology, but are doing like hymns if I wanted to, but yeah. I love where I'm at.
I mean, assuming you're in a major city, there's a church for everyone.
Yeah,
basically.
So yeah, this is at the end of January. So we are a couple weeks into, we're actually in the third week of real NFL football playoffs, but we wrapped up our 60 Cycle Hum fantasy football a couple weeks ago. We got our pedals from CoSonic. Thank you, Jody, for helping us out with this and working with us. I, much to the chagrin of the other players,
oh my gosh,
took first place because the running joke is that I cheated.
Did you cheat, Steve?
There's no way to cheat.
Did you cheat by making all the right decisions?
I cheated by apparently being lucky.
Do you think that there's any expectation that next time you should just, as the host of the show, should just run it and not participate
in it? I should tank my team. That my quarterback should be Colin Kaepernick.
I have no idea what that
means. I know
means.
You don't. But anyway, so we did this fantasy football league. We worked with CoSonic in order. We did some advertising with them. Basically, we traded advertising for cash. I won. There were 12 people involved. Myself, I can't name everyone.
Sure.
I know myself.
Well, 12 people would take all night.
I'm not even going to try.
Okay.
Because I can't remember.
Okay. There it is.
Hold on.
Don't.
I can look it up.
Just give us a breakdown of what happened and talk about the prizes.
So here's what happened. I started out the season terribly. Like, literally, I think my team lost the first, I don't know, 5 games of the season, maybe.
Uh-huh.
4. Maybe I won the first game and I lost the next 4 games. I don't know. My team was terrible. Terrible.
Steve is stalling because he's trying to find the list of people.
But my team was called the Lonesome Kickers after that classic.
Still stalling.
Shut up. classic Adam Sandler song, Lonesome Kicker. It was hilarious. This was back in his original Hanukkah song
days.
Are
we on an Adam Sandler tangent now?
So here are the teams. There was me, the Lonesome Kickers. There was Fuzz and Tim. There was No Morrissey, the Smiths. Tebow's Ebo. The Six String Shredders. Brett Jett. Tony Romo. And the Romosexuals.
Oh my gosh.
No punt intended. Bay Area 12th Man, Team Duke, Team Blankenship, and Can't Buy Me Love. So the winning teams were my team, the Lonesome Kickers, and the second place team, 12th Area Bayman, who was represented by Adam Dolhanek, the Inboxer.
The Inboxer himself.
And there were a lot of guys involved with this. It was a lot of fun. We had our own group for this on Facebook.
Thank goodness.
We talked lots of trash. It was just a ton of fun. Aaron Coleman's team from Heavy Lit Electronics, what team was his? I think Can't Buy Me Love maybe was his team. Yeah. Can't Buy Me Love was his team. We just had a ton of fun. Everybody threw in $20. Adam actually ended up throwing in an extra $50 because he wanted the Ren and Cuff Box of War, which I believe you've demoed.
I have demoed it.
It is a Civil War style, muff fuzz.
Yeah.
And then I came up on top. I have no idea how, because like I said, my team started off terribly.
Well, obviously you cheated.
I obviously cheated. Here's my record. Loss, 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 win, win, win. So 3-3 after 6 weeks, and it did not stop. Win, 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 win.
Oh my gosh.
Win. I just got on the craziest winning streak ever. And my prize that I chose for myself was the Alexander Electronics Golden Reverb.
You haven't tried this thing yet?
Or the Golden Summer. I have not tried it yet.
I did the demo of both these pedals because it was shipped to my house.
That's right. We
paid for it with my PayPal. So this thing showed up. I wasn't even expecting it. I demoed both the pedals. The Golden Summer, you're going to trip out on this thing.
Dude,
man.
I... I spent a lot of time going through cosonic.com, looking through all the different pedals they have. And I was like, you know, what I really want, I love the Afterneath for the weird things it does. But at the end of the day, I want something that does normal reverb. And I thought, like, I listened to a few demos of the Golden Summer. And I was like, it does some weird stuff, but it also does the regular stuff.
At its core, it's a really solid modern style reverb. And then it does some weird stuff.
Yeah.
It does some really fun stuff.
And apparently it's a delay pedal because I totally need another one.
It's also an echo pedal that you can use. Each reverb setting has a delay feature to it. But the echo setting is very clearly a delay setting. The brilliant thing, the one thing that really sticks out to me about these pedal designs, and I apparently... this goes across many of Alexander Pedal's designs.
Yeah.
It's got the tweak knob. At the center position on the tweak knob, it's just your standard dry effect.
Okay.
You turn it to the right.
Mm-hmm.
You have control from 0 to 100% of one effect. You turn it to the left, it's 0 to 100% of a completely different effect.
Oh.
So it's like on one of them... you've got your modulated reverb going one way. It's like a chorus going the other way. It's like a vibrato.
Interesting.
And so it's like you have two different mods. It's not like you have. You have two different mods you can apply at different levels with one knob. And that knob has a different function for each reverb setting. There's three reverb settings.
Right.
So it has...
well, yeah, it's got the shimmer setting. Right. It's got a mod setting, and it has the delay setting.
Yeah. So on the mod setting, I think it's, like I said, chorus or vibrato. On the shimmer setting, it's either high octave or low octave.
Right.
And then for the echo setting, it's either... I think it's like a tone control... it's like a darkness control, basically. So you can have...
for the delay, right.
You can have bright repeats on the delay, or you can have dark repeats for like a more analog sound. It's... this is the first time I've messed with an Alexander pedal. It's one of those ones where I'd put it, you know, on level with like Chase Bliss. Where it's who is the genius who...
well, there's a lot there's a lot less going on. And that's actually one of the reasons I chose the Alexander Golden Summer, is because it's more of a straight ahead pedal. There's four controls plus a toggle, and I'm dumb. I say that I'm not dumb,
right?
I just don't like to think about my effects too much.
You're gonna have a lot of fun with this.
And so the four controls and a fairly warm description. Golden Summer just sounds like a surfy reverb description.
It's not surfy at all.
I didn't expect it to be super surfy. What I expected was the Jan and Dean sound.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's going to be more of a... it's a more modern type of reverb.
Sure.
It's a, you know, I think you're really going to get a kick out of it.
Stop crushing my dreams.
You can definitely dial in some traditional reverb sounds with
it.
And then the Box of War, that thing's a beast, man.
I believe it. Civil War Fuzz from Wren and Cuff, who, by the way, is a sponsor of this episode.
I just want to say, like, the box design on this thing, it makes you feel like you've got a legit pedal. It's heavy. It's beefy. It's a big hunk of metal. And this thing sounds killer. Like, really, really good representation of a Civil War muff. I can totally recommend this thing. I was having a ton of fun with it. Lots of, you know, it's heavy, but there's like a level of clarity there.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this muff, like, and it looks great.
Yeah.
So
if you're a football fan, all I can say is join facebook.com/group/CCCycleHum. It's January, so somewhere around August, July, August, we're probably going to start talking about this again. I've already talked to the other guys in it. Pretty much everyone is stoked about doing another fantasy football season. We'll probably do another... I don't know. If we have a lot of people interested, maybe we'll up the ante. What if we had 24 teams at $50 a piece?
Oh my gosh.
We could buy some serious hardware for that.
Get a guitar.
Right? This past year, we did $20 a piece. And you know what? $20, if you win, you get a free pedal, basically. If you lose, you had a great time hanging out with other guys who are big NFL football fans.
And you helped someone else get a cool pedal.
It was just a lot of fun. I did 5 fantasy football leagues this year.
Oh my gosh, dude. Did you use like the same like people and settings?
No, I didn't. I finished first in this one, second in another one, I think second in a third one, and then like third or fourth in a couple others. I had a really great fantasy football season, but this one was a lot of fun just because it was guys who like, hey, you know what? Maybe you won the fantasy football league, but you got screwed on that Stratocaster deal.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. This has been a really long episode.
It's okay. It's after NAMM.
Yeah, that's true. Big thanks again to our sponsors, Fox Pedals and Rin and Cuff. Check out these guys' sites. Fox Pedals, use the code 60CycleHum at checkout and get 15% off of your order.
That's right.
Check out our demo of the Wave. Check out our demo of the Super Fat Puhuk?
Fukat?
Fook?
Fooker? Fook? I don't know.
We know how to say it, but we're trying to keep our...
our little E on the iTunes.
PG
no
rating.
E on the iTunes.
Yeah. So go check out the videos. Check out the companies. They make incredible stuff. Watch our demo for the Run and Cuff Box of War and for the Alexander Golden Summer, of course. And
yeah. This week's song was sent to us by Mason Lamb. This is a remix of Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers.
This is really interesting. He posted this on the group just to be like, hey, look what I did. And I was like, why don't we play this on the show? Send us an MP3. He found, I don't know where he found him or how he got a hold of these things, but he's got the original tracks, like the individual tracks for this song, and he remixed them in a modern way. And I just think it's a lot of fun. I think you should listen to this and then go back and listen to the original and see if you can pick out the differences.
It definitely has some differences going on that I picked up right away.
Yeah.
But this is just, I feel like Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers. It took me a minute to remember which song this was. And then once I got into it, I was like, this is probably one of the greatest rock songs of all time.
It's a great song.
It's a classic. It's one that like...
talk about like a well-balanced song. That's
exactly.
Got like,
it's very well-balanced.
It's got a lot going on, but it all fits. You know?
Yeah, it feels timeless.
It's that old school studio kind of aesthetic where
exactly.
Everything is intentional. Everything fits. Everything's really done well, you know?
Yeah.
So really, really cool song. Really cool remix. I hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll see you next week.
Have fun.